Well, at a time when Americans are struggling with obesity, not eating enough fruits and vegetables, some major food marketers claim to have an answer. And they're kind of keen to tap into consumer interest in healthier foods. And so some companies are rolling out snacks sprinkled with what they say are real servings of fruits and veggies. Well, is that true? Sue Nitzke of the Department of Nutritional Sciences, UW Extension Nutritional Scientist, our guest today, who comes by every so often to talk about things relating to nutrition. This is kind of an interesting one for me, and you may have a question about something you're eating or about your diet or nutrition. We hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison, reach us at 263-1890, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Sue, welcome back.
Great to be here.
And talking about these advertisements that claim that we've got snacks sprinkled with real servings of fruits and veggies, is that... Should you be worried about that, or at least...
I bet you know what my answer is going to be, Larry.
Oh, yeah, I know what your answer is going to be.
There probably are fruits and veggies there someplace, but it's amazing to me in this year of 2008 how many products are aimed at people to eat fruits and vegetables without feeling like you're eating fruits and vegetables, like there's some reason you would avoid them in their real form at all costs. We have people writing books advising mothers to sneak things into their kids' food so that the kids think they're eating candy when they're really eating, some fruits and vegetables in there. And it's gotten to be a game. And, you know, marketers... When they see that people are interested in doing something without really doing something, they'll help sell you a product that'll get you there. And this is one of those.
Well, you brought some products in, actually.
I did. This was a topic I couldn't resist. So I went to the grocery store yesterday and brought some products that illustrate what I'm talking about. I see you're kind of eyeing up here a cereal product that I brought.
Yeah, I've got to. Let's see. Is that? Well, that's not one I've purchased, fortunately, maybe.
Well, I haven't purchased it myself either. But what I'd encourage your listeners to do, Larry, which is what I'm going to let you do, is I Xeroxed the only part of the whole box that I think gives us any information we can go with. You might notice.
It says probiotic.
Oh, yeah. It says probiotic, and it says it has balance, and it'll purify your system and strengthen things. And, it's like a whole big box full of marketing statements, which, you know, I'm sure they figure there's some grain of truth in there somewhere. But the place that I look to see what I'm buying is the nutrition facts panel and the ingredient list. Mm-hmm. By law, those are governed as they have to give you the right information. So, for instance, this box of cereal has 170 calories in a serving. So that's, you know, right in the range of cereals often have.
Sure.
It has 10 grams of sugar per serving. That's about 2-3 teaspoons. So it's not a particularly low sugar thing. That's about the only claim they don't make on the box, is that it's low in sugar. And you'll see the first ingredient is it's a mix of different grains. But notice something that I just think is so unconscionable, and I see it more and more, is on the third line of the ingredient list, evaporated cane juice crystals. Can you think of a more obtuse way to describe sugar?
Evaporated cane juice crystals is actually sugar.
Of course. You know, and that just irritates me no end. They just try to call it everything they can think of that makes it sound like it might be good for you. And then, of course, if you go down the ingredient list, there's evaporated cane juice crystals in some of the other ingredients. So it's in there several times. And, you know, there's some grains in here. It's not a product that's probably going to hurt you. It might hurt your pocketbook because it was kind of expensive. But it's just a way of making things sound like they're better for you than they are. So if that's what we're dealing with as consumers, I'm here to tell all your listeners to spend 5 minutes more at the store this week than they would have otherwise, really looking at the ingredient list for what they're buying.
Evaporated cane juice crystals. It doesn't sound like it. This one says probiotic digestive wellness cereal. Oh, my goodness.
Well, isn't that something? So, you know, probiotics are a big thing. They're one of the things that people are interested in this year. Probiotics. There's prebiotics and probiotics. Probiotics.
What are they?
It's sort of those good bacteria that we have in our digestive system, particularly in the colon, that have some beneficial properties. And one of the reasons why maybe if you've ever taken an antibiotic, maybe after your antibiotics were over with, your doctor might have said, you know, eat some yogurt with active cultures or something like that. That's that's what probiotics are. They're something that contains bacteria that help with digestion.
Evaporated cane juice crystals.
Well, sugar. Evaporated cane juice has been around a long time on ingredient lists, but this is the first product I've found that I say is cheeky enough to actually then call it evaporated cane juice crystals.
Which is sugar.
Which is sugar.
Bob and Jackson, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hey, good afternoon, Larry, and good afternoon, Sue. Or good morning, I guess. My question is, and it's a perfect segue, I have been told that potassium is very good for blood pressure.
It sure is.
And my wife tells me that's bananas, yogurt, and you just mentioned yogurt, and I'd like to hear your take on that issue.
Well, there's many foods that are high in potassium. I brought the Dietary Guidelines for Americans along with me, Larry, because there's some things in here I want to refer to later. But they have a whole chapter on sodium and potassium, and they talk about them together because reducing your sodium intake is something a lot of people are already very well aware of to help with blood pressure. But the other side of that coin that seems to be just about as important is keeping your potassium intake high. And your potassium comes from fruits and vegetables, from low-fat dairy, well, from all dairy products, but especially low-fat dairy products are more efficient sources. And it's really all the way through our food supply. But the food groups that we're recommending as particularly beneficial to health, fruits and vegetables, whole grains, and low-fat dairy, they're all good sources of potassium. So you don't have to buy exotic foods. If you don't like bananas, then eat an apple. You know what I mean? There's lots of good sources of potassium. And people who eat their recommended servings of fruits and vegetables each day get a good intake of potassium right along with it.
And yogurt's fine.
Yogurt being made from milk.
And Sue, can you recommend Brussels sprouts?
I particularly think they're delicious. If you like them, eat them. Yeah,
Larry, I know you like them.
I love them.
My children call them poison green plants from Jupiter.
Well, you know, that actually brings up there's some interesting research being done at Pennsylvania. It has a big lab that studies how we perceive tastes. And there are some people who are actually finding out that people who have a special sensitivity to bitter flavors are more likely to avoid strong-tasting vegetables. And I find the taste of Brussels sprouts pleasant and enjoyable, but people just can't stand them. And I think that might be very much tied to a genetic predisposition, which children especially seem to be tuned into, to not like strong-flavored vegetables. Hmm. Now, when you cook Brussels sprouts, you know you have to be careful not to overcook them, because the longer you cook them, you want to cook them enough just to that tender, crisp stage so they're chewable. But if you cook them too long, then that sulfury taste will come through even stronger, and you know it'll even smell up your kitchen if you go overboard. So I think some of the strong-flavored vegetables are especially a good challenge to cook them to perfection and no more.
Okay, Bob, thanks.
Hey, thank you.
Appreciate it. Beth in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Beth.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to know if your guest could please recommend maybe one or two books that kind of pull all this stuff together and will give you accurate tables of how much for instance, potassium and sodium is in a given food, or even a website, because there seems to be an awful lot of conflicting information out there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was just telling Larry that I brought the Dietary Guidelines for Americans along with me. It's on the web. It's totally, you can read it online. And there are some appendices in the back of the booklet. The booklet itself is about 70-some pages long. It was really written for educators and professionals, but it's easy enough to read. And it has tables in the back that have the sodium content of different foods and that sort of thing. And actually, the U.S. Department of Agriculture has online a food composition database that's very easy to search. And I use it all the time when I get these questions like how much magnesium is in, and then you fill in the blank kind of thing. And you can look that up in just a few seconds. It has a fairly long URL or, you know, the address on the web. So I'm supposing you could find it with a search engine. We actually have it as a link in the extension part of our department's website as well. And our department's website is www.nutrisci.wisc.edu.
That's an easy way to do it.
Yeah. So if you go to the extension section in the blue bar on the left-hand side, and then for consumers, you'll find a link to the database that the U.S. Department of Agriculture maintains. It's the best database in the world about what's in foods, and it's easy to use. And then one more answer is the American Dietetic Association publishes a complete guide to food nutrition. It's actually called the Complete Food Nutrition Guide. And the third edition just came out recently. That's all updated with the new My Pyramid and Dietary Guidelines recommendations.
So,
and it's very carefully written and in easy-to-understand language. I tell our educators in our extension programs all around the state that's the first place to look for consumer questions.
And the title is the...
The American Dietetic Association Complete Food and Nutrition Guide.
And we'll be back with Sue Nitzke in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking food now with Sue Nitzke, UW Extension Nutritional Scientist. Are some of those foods that claim to be really healthy for you actually healthy for you? That's one of the issues we're taking up now with her. And Sue, before we go back to the phones, you've brought some other examples of foods that may not be all they appear to be. And you've got a nutrition label for me. I'm getting another nutrition label from Sue here to look at.
Okay, so what I have here are some yogurt bars that you're supposed to eat for breakfast, and you see the lovely picture on the front. Doesn't that look like it's yummy and good for you?
Yeah, it does.
And look at all the claims all over the box about all these things that it's
keeping you going in the right direction,
So, Larry, the filling is obviously yogurt, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the first ingredient in the filling?
High fructose corn syrup.
And the second?
Fructose. And the fourth, sugar.
Right. And do you see what comes down much farther is yogurt powder?
Yeah.
It's right down there with modified tapioca starch. So the amount of yogurt in these yogurt bars is not all that great. And then I finally figured out where the filling ends and the rest of the outer part of the bar begins. And that starts with enriched flour, which is white flour. And then oats, and then our favorite sugar. So and it goes
and
on
then, and
there.
Then more high fructose corn syrup
and yeah,
honey.
All that good stuff. Yeah, so there's they really should call them sugar bars with a little oats and yogurt. You know what I mean? So another example, I think, these have even more sugar per serving than the product I was making fun of a little while ago. And even a better example of how you just can't go by the picture and all the fancy words on the front.
It sure looks good on the outside.
Well, you know, we could taste them. I've had them for a while and never opened it. It doesn't tempt me.
Oh, boy. Loretta in Eau Claire has a question for us. Loretta, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi. Last Christmas, we were needing some vanilla. I went to the store. I could not find any brand that was in the regular spice section that didn't have vanilla with corn syrup. I mean, they had font maybe an inch high saying pure vanilla, but it wasn't just alcohol and vanilla beans. It was corn syrup. And I had to go to organic and health. We watch labels extremely carefully because gluten intolerance in the family.
Oh.
But I just wanted people to be aware that that's not what they're getting. Mm-hmm. Is they're getting some expensive filler there because they're charging the same prices.
Hmm. Yeah, I buy my vanilla at a spice store. It costs more money, and I'm not recommending that everybody needs to do that. But I do find there's a difference in quality with, lots of different kinds of vanilla. And then, of course, there's vanillin, which is an artificial flavor mixture. So,
some of us don't get spice stores.
Oh, yeah, we're lucky to have one, Larry, that's just about, a mile or two away from here.
Not very far from here.
Anyway, I just wanted to warn people.
Yeah,
so check that label. If it says pure vanilla.
Yeah, not that it's going to hurt you, but
no.
As the caller said, another reason just to know what you're buying, and if that's not satisfactory to you, I personally wouldn't be worried about buying a vanilla that had a little corn syrup in the ingredient list as long as it was far down
the list.
Right. By law, the ingredient list has to tell you things in the order they're added by weight. So typically the things that are watery end up high on the ingredient list just because they weigh more, which is kind of an artifact. But other than that, you can just read on down the list and see how high what you want is in the ingredient list.
Yeah. Thanks, Loretta. Appreciate it. Yvonne in Brown Deer, your turn. Hi, Yvonne.
Good morning. Oh, I should look at the clock before I say
now.
That.
Yeah.
Afternoon.
Well, I'm so glad to talk to a nutritionist. I had, about 2.5 years ago, I had a heart attack and multiple strokes the same day. I got it all off, in one day. It was easy. And, I know they say those things are different for women than men.
Mm-hmm.
I had no pain until I woke up after the surgery.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've been trying to eat properly, considering that I'm 72 years old and I'd like to see more of my grandchildren. I started out following some things that I got from the Heart Society, and my cardiologist finally said, throw it away. I don't think they do a good job at all. So I did, and I got some things from the extension and tried to figure that out. And I just got very confused because I have a little trouble thinking sometimes these days. But what I finally did, the first year and a half I was doing well, considering, but I just didn't have energy. So I went on a vegetarian diet, sort of, with 2.5 cups of vegetables a day and 2 cups of fruit, and then filled in with other things, trying to avoid white flour stuff and all that. You know, if it hadn't been for Ratatouille, Do you use Ratatouille? Do you make that?
I personally come from a German background, and Ratatouille wasn't one of the things that I learned to eat. I mean, I've had it, and I enjoy it, but I don't make it very often.
Well, I'll tell you, when I made that, and there's all different ways to make it, I would feel so good. It was almost like I was 40 years younger.
Well, Yvonne, let me comment on a few of the things that you've said. One of the things that happens many times after people have had some sort of a procedure involving the heart is a period of depression, actually. And it varies. It's almost like postpartum depression is the post-heart attack or post-cardiac surgery. So, you're feeling like you didn't have a lot of energy and then it gradually got better. May or may not have anything to do with how you were eating at the time. But, eating well, of course, is what you should do. Eating a lot of fruits and vegetables, what you described is actually what my pyramid and the dietary guidelines recommend. 2 cups of fruit and 2.5 cups of vegetables is right in line with a daily recommendation for most women. And that's great. What I often find, though, is people kind of hone in on one part of a balanced diet and forget the rest. So, for instance, there's some diet advice out now that was published in the New York Times, and it got down to 3 basic rules. It was eat food, not too much, and mostly plants. And I'm like, okay, eat food. And what he meant by that, of course, is like real food rather than some of these concoctions I brought here for us to make fun of. Not too much, of course, because keeping your weight in line is so important these days. And then mostly plants. And that's lots of fruits and vegetables, which is fine. But some people have gotten the mostly plants message a little too much to heart and forgotten about the benefits of low-fat milk and dairy products and some of the lean protein sources that, you know, if unless you have some kind of philosophical objection to eating meat or that sort of thing, I'd encourage people to remember that there are healthy foods in all of the food groups, and it's the proportion and your choices within those groups that really makes the difference between a good diet and a great diet.
Good points. Thank you very much. And Yvonne, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's see, Bill in Hollandale, I believe, is next. Bill, hello to you.
Afternoon. Say, I'm wondering about, you may have talked about this because I tuned in late, but I'm wondering what the scoop is on labeling and the trans fats. There seems to be a large number of products out there that say zero trans fat. But when you look at the ingredients, you find trans fats in the ingredients. And so there must be some kind of cutoff or something. And it seems like if you eat a number of these products, that you're still going to get a lot of trans fat in your diet.
Actually, the yogurt bars we were just looking at, Larry, have a good illustration of that. If you see on the ingredient list, it says it's partially hydrogenated cottonseed and soybean oil. It's in the third line.
Yes.
So that implies that there are trans fats in this product. But if you look up in the nutrition facts panel, it says trans fat 0 grams. So how can that be? I get this question probably, well, not as often now, but it's a very confusing concept. In order to have kind of consistent rules for the food label, the FDA decided a long time ago for kinds of fat that if they're up to 0.5 grams, you can call it zero.
Oh.
So up to a half a gram of trans fat in a product, in a serving of a product, gets to be labeled as zero, even though it's made with partially hydrogenated, and then you fill in the kind of oil, which usually involves the production of some amount of trans fat in the process. So it's not like zero, like nothing. You know, but it's zero, meaning small enough to be a negligible amount of trans fat in these products. And what I've told our extension educators is that really it isn't an important amount if it is labeled zero on the product, unless it's something that you'd eat many, many, many servings and could have it sort of add up over the day. So I think, especially if you're comparing margarines and things like that, I would still look at how much trans fat it says on the label and go by that. But if you want to be really strict about it and stay away with anything with even a trace of trans fat, then looking for partially hydrogenated oils on the list of ingredients and see how high that is on the ingredient list would be something to do. It's not something I personally think most people are ready to spend their time on.
Yeah.
But for Bill in Hollandale, he might be that interested.
Might want to do that. You bet. Thanks, Bill. Steele and Nina, your turn. Thank you for waiting. Hi.
Yeah, afternoon. The other day I was looking at frozen fruits and, an example, blueberries between two different brands. One would have maybe 6 grams of sugar per serving, another 4. And do they determine that by the naturally occurring sugars, or do they also toss some in?
Thanks so much for asking about that. What they count is any kind of sugar. If you're looking at the sugars line in the nutrition facts panel, whether it's naturally part of the product or whether it was added as crystallized evaporated cane juice or honey or whatever form that sugar took, that shows up as sugars on the label in the nutrition facts panel. And that's why I tell people to look at that number, because many products have lots of ingredients, so you can't really tell how much sugar is there. But both the naturally occurring and the added sugar shows up in the sugars part of the nutrition facts panel. And whether it's 6 grams versus 4 grams, you also have to look at the serving size. Now, you said this is just
frozen blueberries.
Frozen blueberries.
Yeah, as an example, yes.
Yeah, so if the serving size should probably be a half a cup or something like that.
Correct.
Yeah, so if the serving size is the same, then you can tell that one brand has added more sugar to their product than the other.
Hmm.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. I'll have to pay attention to that. Usually we have a lot of blueberries. We buy, have them frozen, and put them on cereal. And so I never paid attention to that.
Well, and I didn't ask, was his name Steele in Nina?
Yeah.
If there was actually sugar on the ingredient list, or if they were maybe one was a different kind of blueberries, or they were tested differently. The difference between 6 grams and 4 grams isn't all that great, and I wouldn't expect much sugar to be added to frozen blueberries.
No.
Anyway.
No,
so,
you wouldn't think.
So it might be one of the artifacts of testing, you know, one lab versus another, or how they decided to label them.
Okay.
Some of those, when the numbers are really close, may or may not mean anything.
Travis in Appleton, your turn now. Hi, Travis.
Hey, I just had a question. I'm a big coffee drinker and whatnot. So, recently I was in a grocery store and they have different mints now that they're selling, which have vitamins, and in one instance they actually have caffeine added to these different mints. Mm-hmm. And so my main question was the mints that have vitamins, which I think it was like calcium, vitamin D, and vitamin C. I was just wondering, are those really doing us any good? And
you know, I'm so glad you asked. I also brought some products with me, Larry, that we could look at if you want to later. But to get to Travis's question, adding vitamins to water, you know, you can buy vitamin water, which is actually sugar water with vitamins, or sweetened water with vitamins. All kinds of products is just rampant right now, and there seems to be some kind of perception that it's better for you if vitamins are added. It might make you feel peppier if there's a lot of caffeine added. I don't know about that, but that's just silliness. If you want to take vitamins, take a multivitamin from the drugstore and look for one that has a pretty complete array of the ones with daily values and not a lot of other stuff. But it doesn't have to be expensive, and it's, you know, people say it's a nutritional insurance policy, and the nutrition experts are actually arguing about that right now because research to back that up is pretty weak. But, you know, if you want to take vitamins, take a vitamin supplement in the morning, then you know what you're taking and you're done. But candy with vitamins added, and now there's all kinds of soda pop with vitamins added, and it's just gotten silly, and if people pay more for it or think it's healthier for them than the competitive product, then the manufacturers will keep doing it, which I hope it's just one of those things that disappears in a few months.
You brought some along, some water that has
Yeah,
vitamins.
I have antioxidant water here for you, and I have a new kind of Gatorade, or a new kind of electrolyte beverage, I should call it. And if you've noticed at the grocery store, the amount of aisle space devoted to various energy drinks and nutritional beverages of one sort or another has just gotten amazingly large. And, you know, I go to a exercise club and I see people dragging these products around and wonder how much money they've paid for them, because they're just, for 99% of the people who use them, I can see no nutritional advantage. They sound good. They have a lot of ingredients that for a certain kind of athletes might have a benefit somewhere along the line. But, you know, antioxidant water, it's just taking something that sounds antioxidants, of course, in fruits and vegetables. Vitamin C is, and certain forms of vitamin A, et cetera, are good examples. Vitamin E. They have a healthful function in your body, but once you have enough of it, taking more of them isn't going to do anything for you. So, you know, sort of drinking it in your water all day long is just probably giving yourself, as they say, some expensive urine.
Matt and Nina, hi to you.
Hello, I'm fine. I have a question about artificial sweeteners, and you mentioned one of your products that had fructose as well as high fructose corn syrup, and then there's just fructose corn syrup, and I'm just wondering the differences between the fructoses and why they list them sometimes, you know, twice on the label, and if you could maybe just comment on the difference, and I'll take my answer off the air.
All right.
Yeah, actually, one of the products that I was just showing, Larry, has a couple of forms like that, and it mm-hmm. is confusing. Basically, I tell people just think of them, they're all different forms of sugar. And when you see the word several times in a nutrition label, then it's usually in parentheses. Like the first product or the second product we looked at, Larry, was these yogurt bars.
Yeah.
And first it listed the ingredients in the filling, and then it listed the ingredients in the outer shell. So you saw the same word at least twice on the label for your crystallized evaporated cane juice or whatever it was. And that's because it was the ingredients in one part of the product and then the ingredients in another part of the product, which is a legal way to do that. On this particular product, another thing they did that irks me is they put all the ingredients in capital letters.
Yeah.
And research that's been done about readability shows that that's a good way of slowing down your ability to read a lot of words. You probably know that being a communications person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's if I were the Food and Drug Administration, I'd tell them they had to cut that out because it makes it even harder to read through the ingredient list and find out what you're buying. I don't know if that's just me being paranoid about it or if the company did it on purpose, but it does make it harder to read. And I'm good for Matt and Nina for going through the ingredient list and looking for the what's actually in his products that he's buying.
Thanks, Matt. Pat in Elm Grove. Hi.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I have two questions. I happen to be reading right now the In Defense of Food, Michael Pollan book.
Yes.
And I'm wondering what you feel, I guess, first about his criticism of the nutrition industry. He refers to it as the age of nutritionism starting, you know, maybe 50 years ago, and that we're eating, he wants us to eat food instead of eating nutrients. And then his comments on the influence of the industry, particularly the sucrose industry, and things that they tried to change and the inability of them to change them because of threats.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering what you feel about, you know, his first book, first of all, The Omnivore's Delight, and then his second book. And then I have a second question about whole wheat.
Okay.
What do you say about Mr. Pollan?
Yeah, you know, I'm still reading Omnivore's Delight. I'm about halfway through. And I found it to be maybe 75 to 90% that I was in agreement with things he was saying. But he did make some errors in there and things that he was criticizing. The first chapter is about corn or something like that. He did make some errors that I think a careful food scientist or a nutrition scientist would have caught. So I actually, and I've read about his book, In Defense of Food, and actually, I think those little rules I gave you about eat food, mostly plants, not too much, comes from him. I think that's going to be about the same kind of category. I think the basic philosophy there is good. Some of the details I probably like to quibble with him about. Did you have a particular thing that you wanted to ask about?
Well, I think the thing that was of interest to me was the power of the sucrose lobby to prevent. To prevent 25% of our diet, according to him, being able to be in carbohydrates like sugar. And, you have to read something and understand whether he's correct or not.
Right, and that's one of the things, actually, that is in both books. And let me comment on that, if I could, kind of quickly, because I know we're getting to the end of our time. The Institute of Medicine, in looking at the research behind what is harmful about sugar, said that really we can't find any particular reason to make a strict rule about how you have to limit your sugar intake.
Mm.
What you need to do is keep your calorie intake in line and then try to eat foods that are high in nutrient density. So by doing that, you wouldn't eat 25% of your calories from sugar. But as far as looking at some sort of disease consequence of eating a high-sugar diet, they didn't find that. Michael Pollan says that they did that to kowtow to the sugar industry. I'm not so sure I'd go that far. So it's, you know, it's kind of a complicated topic that he, I think, overemphasized the political ramifications. But having said that, I'll say that the politics, the pressure on Congress from people who have lots of money in their pockets to make rules that are easy to get around for some of the information on your food packages is probably real, and why I would point people, again, to the ingredient list and the Nutrition Facts Panel. That's your best source of information.
And unfortunately, we don't have time for Pat's second question.
Oh.
Thank you, Sue. We'll get you back soon. We'll talk some more.
Okay, Larry.
Sue Nitzke, UW Extension Nutritional Scientist, our guest. She'll be back, and we'll do it again. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Net.